You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Liberal Party candidates and members are attacking one another publicly over their willingness, or lack thereof, to criticize Israel's war on the people of Lebanon. There also is widespread disagreement among Canadians with our military intervention in Afghanistan. In short, Canadian foreign and military policy has assumed a political importance for ordinary Canadians that is unprecedented in recent years. But where are those in power heading, those who have been used to working offstage as they shape our foreign and military policies? To explore this question, we've contacted John Elmore in Toronto. He's an independent journalist and co-author of the forthcoming book, Afghanistan Adventure, Canada's Foreign Policy for the 21st Century. Greetings, John, and welcome back to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
I'm glad to be with you, Mordecai.
Many Canadians would describe Canadian foreign and military policy as that of a peacekeeper, and they're shocked by the gap between that image and current policies. Is the gap as great as many seem to think?
Well, if you listen to the generals who would have been the generals in charge of the peacekeeping missions that we've been told about for so many years and the mythology that's been foisted on us for so many years, they're yelling at the top of their lungs right now that we never were peacekeepers, we never were neutral. The conservative government saying the same thing, and before them, the liberal government. But we can just work backwards if we want to see this peacekeeper mythology in play, particularly since the fall of the Cold War, the fall of the Soviet Union. 1999, Canada was involved in an unmandated operation in Kosovo, 78 days of prolonged bombing in Serbia and Kosovo. We were involved in Bosnia in the 1990s, which our generals that are in Afghanistan now tell us was good practice for what's going on in Afghanistan. 1993, the Somalia affair, as it's called. Canadians, of course, the brutal torture and murder of the Somali youth. And then, of course, throughout the 1990s, you can never forget that Canada was front and center during the brutal sanctions regime against Iraq, which, according to all available statistics, was one of the most draconian measures enforced upon a civilian population in history, a siege mentality that Canada was front and center on. So for quite some time, our generals have been saying that the peacekeeper myth is needs to go by the wayside. This is a new Canadian military for the 21st century, and if people have seen the new ads, there's not very much peacekeeping in those new ads.
So what is it that's dramatic about the consciousness? Why do you think the consciousness of Canadians still sees this big shift and particularly associates it with the Harper government?
Well, the peacekeeping mythology worked well for Canadians because it gave us that moral superiority over the Americans. I think Canadians have always known that the Americans were sort of adventuring around the world, but Canadians, we're always doing good. We're the missionary country. We always went in there to help people and to do good. This mythology is trying to be pushed away by the generals because what they're embarking on is a very different project than that. This is war fighting for the 21st century. And of course, first and foremost for Canada, the strategic priority is what the terminology is, interoperability with the United States, the ability to seamlessly integrate into the American project for the 21st century. And we're only 6 years into that century, and we've seen that it's one of the most aggressive and belligerent periods of American empire in the past 200 years.
Is this shift of integration, interoperability, a Harper innovation? Does it well predate the Harper government?
Well, it well predates the Harper government. In fact, it goes back to the 1990s. You can see traces of it in Canadian policy going back to the 1990s, predominantly because you can see it in American policy. The fall of the Cold War, the end of the sort of paradigm of huge armed battalions fighting in Central Europe, fighting across the Volga against the Russian mechanized units, That way of warfare, people could see quite clearly in the 1990s that the 21st century warfare was not going to involve large mechanized brigades and battalions, that this was going to be the new kind of war that we've seen in Grozny, in Fallujah, in Jenin, as we saw in South Lebanon, as we're seeing in Kandahar. This is the 21st century type of warfare. It's concentrated in urban settings, as we saw at the conference by the UN Habitat conference that was just in Vancouver in the spring. We could have half the world's population living in cities, and by the middle of the 21st century, we could have 80% of the world's population living in squalid slums. In order to maintain empire for the 21st century, important powers understand, namely Canada and the U.S., that the new type of war is going to be urban-centered war fighting, and this is the way of the future.
And how in this policy and in the documents, planning documents that you've examined of Canadian foreign military policy, would you say there's an integration between diplomacy, development? All these words are mentioned, as well as quote unquote defense being equivalent to war making.
Absolutely, and it goes back to the Liberal government again, and they use the terminology whole-of-government approach or a Team Canada approach. In the 1950s, during the counterinsurgency wars in Algeria and in Southeast Asia, they called it a unity of approach. It's not really new, but the idea is the whole-of-government, inextricable components of the government. In other words, the aid element, the diplomacy element, and the defense element are inextricable. Canada calls this the three D's. It was a Liberal policy that there was articulated at length. Three D's, they're inextricable. So sometimes, for instance, in Afghanistan, it's the defense element, it's the war fighting element. Other times, it's the diplomacy element, and we can look to the summer in Lebanon or in Palestine, where we're Canada's front and center in a siege, a diplomatic siege, an economic siege on the Palestinian population. In other situations, such as in Haiti, we have the Canadian International Development Agency and the RCMP on the ground. So different countries require different tactics, but in terms of Canadian policymaking, they don't separate them. It's inextricable. The three D's, the Team Canada, the whole of government approach. Sometimes it requires one form of intervention and sometimes another.
When I've spoken to some members of the Parliament from the New Democratic Party who are very much opposed to the war making, they were quite shocked to see that that the Canadian policy documents integrated diplomacy and aid development with war making. They think these policies are separable, and I guess that seems to be also shared very widely in the Canadian public, that aid is one thing, diplomacy is another thing, and war making, which so many people seem shocked with and do not want, is a third, and simply lop off that one limb and the other two will walk with dignity.
Well, it's crafted confusion, and the idea is to create this idea, which we've seen the NDP pick up and run, that we can intervene economically, diplomatically, we can intervene in other countries' affairs, and that's legitimate. It's only when we do it by force of arms that it's problematic. And, of course, this is a major issue. Economic intervention, of course, defined the latter half of the 20th century, and we saw the role that that played in the world. Economic intervention can be far more deadly than military intervention. The idea that the NDP is calling for a separation of these is a fundamental misreading of Canadian policy. So, for instance, CEDA, Canadian International Development Agency, operating in southern Afghanistan, the bulk, if not the vast majority of their contracts are security-related contracts. In other words, the International Development Agency is using funds to train police forces, security forces, and we, of course, know these security forces are dubious, to say the least. We have no idea who it is that we're training in Afghanistan. We have no idea what forces we're propping up. But what we can look at is the 30-year history of intervention in Afghanistan, where that's led that tragic country. And the NDP is making a major misreading, and the idea that removing combat troops from South Afghanistan, which is what the NDP is calling for, is tantamount to withdrawal, is a fallacy. That's called redeployment, and still a military operation. They simply want to redeploy the troops to Kabul.
The United States has used both Republican and Democratic parties. They have institutions which operate in foreign countries promoting, as they say, democracy, and that's used to promote dissent against regimes which they oppose and to create a destabilization situation. Does Canada at all participate in its foreign policy in a similar way?
Canada is the most important element in that type of democracy promotion diplomatic front because, as the Americans widely acknowledge, Canada has a legitimacy in world affairs that the Americans don't. When Canadians go in there talking about democracy, it's a little bit different than when the Americans do, although it's worth noting to Canadian listeners that that's changing rapidly. And as somebody who reports all over the world, particularly in these hotspots, I can tell you that being a Canadian has lost its edge. It's very much the same as being American, but very much Canada's involved in these kind of democracy promotion operations. We've seen them in Palestine particularly, where Canada is very much involved in the training of Fatah forces who are openly attempting to bring down the Palestinian elected government of Hamas. We see today across the Reuters wire that there's $50 million being given to an impoverished country in order to undermine the Hamas government. Canada's front and center and always has been front and center in these operations. What has changed is that Canada is now front and center in the war-fighting element as well, and this is the change. Canada has always been involved in the undermining and intervention through diplomatic means. Of course, you can go back to Vietnam for that kind of examples. But what is different is that Canada is now the sharp end of the spear in South Afghanistan, leading the operations, leading the war fighting counterinsurgency elements. And the important thing is that Rick Hillier, Canada's top general, says that Afghanistan is not an aberration. It's, quote, a glimpse of the future. It's not a one-off foreign policy objective. And Michael Ignatieff said that Afghanistan is a test of the paradigm shift. So we have policy planners and executors saying that Afghanistan is a hint for the Canadian public for what is coming in the 21st century, and that's an important element for Canadians to understand and be organizing around.
And where is the dissent going to come from that policy?
Well, the dissent has to come from the street because there's two elements of the Canadian policy. One is the war-fighting element, but as important as the war-fighting is the mustering the political will, as they call it. And there's a major Senate report just released about mustering the political will to fight in the 21st century. Canadians are a little bit hesitant to get involved in this American-style counterinsurgency warfighting, and it's important to name the cities that highlight this warfighting. Fallujah, which was defined by the ruination of more than half of the city. Jenin, which involved the bombing of a refugee camp into gravel. Grozny, which was an infamous 10-year war in Chechnya in order to destroy the resistance. This is the direction that Canada is going, and it's necessary to promote political will on the ground within the Canadian populace, because no matter how good the war-fighting apparatus is in Afghanistan, if the Canadian population doesn't support it, it won't fly.
Well, thanks a lot for speaking with us this morning, and we'll look forward to reading your book, and I hope others will too.
It's my pleasure.
Bye-bye, John.
Thanks.
I've been speaking with John Elmore in Toronto. He's an independent journalist, and he's co-author with Anthony Fenton of the forthcoming book. Its title is Afghanistan Adventure, Canada's Foreign Policy for the 21st Century.